This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by BlackStarLabs.com. When you place your order, don't forget to mention the FitCast. Well, welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 144. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and first off with us is Jonathan Fass of AcceleratedStrength.com. What's up, John? And we got Tony Gemmelcore of GemmelcoreTraining.com. How you doing, Tony?
I'm doing well.
And we have Leap. What's the...
What's up, Kevin?
What up, Lee?
Wow, you just bypassed them like that.
Kind of like the Yankees bypassed the Red Sox like they were.
I was hoping Daisy Duke was going to be back on the show this week. What's that, John?
Huh?
What's that? I can't hear you.
Pardon?
Oh, it's because I hung up on you, John Fass. See, you don't mess with the guy that has control of the Skype conference. So that way we don't get to talk to John as much. It's really bad. But we'll come back to him when the mailbag comes up because that's a lot more important to have John around for. He doesn't really have to be here for any of the other stuff. So, Lee, what's up?
Not much, Kevin. You know, it's been a busy week. It's been a busy week. I've been writing. I started my pre-launch whatever for the Body by Eats program. And that's been crazy. Lots of food picture taking and interviews and emails, and it's going to be insane.
Nice.
2 months. It's going to suck. But I love it.
I'm sure I know our listeners are looking forward to it, so you're going to have to keep us updated as the time approaches to check
out. I will do. I think John's upset.
I don't think so.
I'm reading the dialogue on the chat room. And
the thing is, John knows that we can't swear on the show anymore. So,
well, he's getting all the swearing out on the chat room.
I know it's okay. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to just simply do this, and hopefully he will get the message that I want him to receive in the chat window. So that's the best I can do for Jonathan Fass. And John, just what do you do? Listen to this. That is directed towards you.
He's threatening your Facebook, Kevin.
Okay, go for it, John. Anyways, for our listeners that tuned into our very awesome podcast this week, I want to quickly talk about some FitCast-related stuff. First off, as I promised to talk about, finished Girth Control by Alan Aragon, and it is a fantastic book. It's, I guess it's Tony and I were talking about this before the show, but it's came out in late 2007. It's still a great piece of material, and I talked to Alan a little bit about it through email. And he likes the book, but he does like the research review a lot more. So make sure if you have his book and you haven't checked out the research review, do that. And definitely feel free to go both ways on that. But yeah, good stuff. Pick it up. Let's see. Crap, I could have John. John, all right, we're going to pause the recording and we're going to get John back on. I'm sorry, folks. All right, we got Dr. Jonathan Fass back on the line, and we're going to talk about two things. I'm going to let John hit on one of them, but first off, thank you for the donations so far. I was going to read off names of people who donated, but I don't know if you want your names read, so I would like to do that, to thank people for their donations to the podcast every week. If you do make a donation, let me know in like the little email thing if you would like your name read or not, if it's okay that we do that. But why don't you hit on the next thing we were going to talk about, John?
Sure. What is it?
It was about how you originally lost a bet in terms of baseball, and you donated $50 to the Pitbull Rescue Foundation Central.
I did, because as most of the listeners, I hope, realize at this point, I am a diehard animal lover, and so when I get the opportunity to donate, I usually go there. A couple other charities, but usually animals. So in the show notes from episode 143 when we talked about me losing the bet, I just posted up the receipt to my donation, which had been to the Pitbull Rescue Central. And we got this pretty cool response from Rob. He said, Jonathan, you're now my 10-year-old daughter's official hero. She regularly takes out soda cans to the recycling depot, then donates the money to our local shelter, along with all of our leftover newspapers, which they use to line the pages. And that was from Rob. And that was just absolutely awesome. Like, I thought that was the coolest thing that I had heard in a long time. And a 10-year-old girl just doing that every week, just out of love of her heart to help some animals in need. So, you know, good job, Rob, and your daughter. And we just wanted to acknowledge that on the show because that was just awesome.
I think we should hook her up with a Fitcast t-shirt.
Totally.
Because nothing is cuter than a 10-year-old in a Fitcast t-shirt with a gigantic dude on the front of it.
Yeah, so. But Tony took all the smalls.
Yeah, Tony. I know. Tony, can you send back some of them?
Oh, wait, what?
The size small t-shirts? I mean, the XS's?
Come on. one of my athletes was busting my chops the other week, calling me Baby Gap. Baby Gap. So it kind of got to me, so now lately I've been wearing extra larges. I'm like, all right, it's getting a bit ridiculous. So.
It's nothing to be ashamed of, bro.
Johnny, you know.
Yeah, we also had a lot of comments in the post about the Tracy Anderson segment that we posted last week. Tony, did you get a chance to view?
No, I did not hear that. What would you guys do? It was a whole segment on her.
There was a interview on a New York television station about how she knits muscles and reengineers the muscular structure against genetics.
Now.
I know.
Shouldn't be this.
We're not. We're gonna bash Time Magazine a little bit this week instead. So that's coming up on this week's episode. Last thing I want to talk about: Mike Robertson is doing something very cool at robertsontrainingsystems.com/blog. And what Mike has done is he's set up a post called the Lift Strong Call to Arms, and you know, we're all trying to support the Lift Strong Foundation that kind of Alan Cosgrove has put together, the idea behind it. And Mike has kind of gone one step further, and he's kind of putting his money where his mouth is. And he's put up a couple stipulations in terms of how many copies that they can sell through Robertson Training Systems, and he's also said that if he sells 100 copies of Lift Strong in the next week, he's going to send give away 10 free t-shirts. If he sells 250, he's going to take on one or two online training clients from the bunch of people who purchased it. If he sells 500 copies, he's going to hold a free one-day seminar for anyone who purchased a copy and wants to attend. And if he sells 1,000 copies, he will put together a super event in Indianapolis for anyone who purchases a copy, and talks about getting guys together like Alan Cosgrove, Dave Tate, Bill Hartman, Eric Cressy, and some other guys. And, you know, it's something very cool that Mike's putting together. And now you have one less reason to pick up Lift Strong. If you haven't already, you really should go pick it up and, you know, buy a couple of copies, give them to your friends who are into fitness. And maybe that would be one last time they will bug you about how to get Ripstis's abs, and they can just maybe learn through reading some of the articles in the Lift Strong CD. So check that out. And we're going to have Mike Robertson on the show next week, so hopefully we'll have him talking about that a little bit as well. If you want to send in questions in regards to that or anything for Mike Robertson, please send them to questions@thefitcast.com, or you can go to the contact section of thefitcast.com. Just make sure to put in questions for Mike Robertson in the subject line. All right, you guys want to take a break and talk about some mailbag stuff?
Sure,
absolutely.
Lee?
Fine.
All right.
Always got to be... Always got to be against us, Lee.
I was just waiting. Didn't realize it was like in our round table of like, yes, Kevin, let's do the mailbag now.
It's always a round table.
You just want to be fair. You are the lone female voice. Tony counts as half, but...
Yeah, I get you.
We'll be right back. If you want to get the best tasting, highest quality protein powder out there, you got to go to BlackStarLabs.com. Now with new discounted prices, so you can save more than ever. First question from the mailbag. Hey, Kevin and everyone else. I was wondering if you could talk about the physiological differences between former fat people who have never been overweight and how that affects training and diet. For example, take two people who train regularly and are about the same size. The former fat person will have more fat cells than the regular person, even if they are empty, which could be affecting certain hormone levels. I'm sure there are other differences as well, and if so, how should the training and dieting plans be changed for former fat people? Also, there are former fat people who were only 30 pounds overweight and those who were 130 pounds overweight. So could you discuss if the degree of former fatness matters? Thanks, Jessica. And Lee, you just talked about this on your podcast this past week or something along the same lines.
Yeah, yeah. The biggest difference that is going to be made in a situation like this is not so... Well, I mean, to a degree of how much, obviously, if you enter into an extreme fat mass building of, like, you know, when you're in adulthood, like we're talking like 200 pounds, then obviously you're going to be more likely to create more fat cells. But usually the issue of this is going to be when, not how much. If you put on your excess fat when you're a child, then it's a lot more likely that you're going to have a lot more problems going into adulthood with hormone regulations, leptin resistance, insulin sensitivity, things like that, than you are as an adult, because during childhood and puberty is when you create the most fat cells. And this is something to keep in mind in what I talked about on my podcast for parents out there. If you think that... you know, you're not creating something that's hard for your child to deal with, think again, because what a child creates and a young teenager is going to create in their youth is going to be what they're pretty much stuck with for life. So childhood obesity is very serious in that aspect and should be taken very seriously, because let's say, what kind of role does it play? We don't know, like, for 100% sure. There's a lot of different points to it, and it's kind of a hard thing to measure. You know, set point could be different, meaning that it could have you could not be able to keep a lower weight as easy as someone who is someone else going to keep a lower weight because you have excess fat cells. You could have leptin resistance issues and not signal right to your brain, so therefore feeding is going to be something that is going to be more important to you to have, like, at intervals. You could have peptide issues, ghrelin issues. I mean, it can really vary. And so there's not really, like, an answer to say, like, oh, well, what kind of diet should I eat for that? There's really not an answer for that. It's more, I mean, basically stick to the basic principles that anybody else would: figure out your maintenance, eat a healthy and, you know, balanced diet, things like that. The issue, if there is going to be an issue, is going to be more likely to be caused if you were in youth and gained a lot of mass. If you're an adult and you gain a lot of mass, you can create new fat cells, but it's not as easy. It's going to take a lot of excess weight. It can happen in pregnancy sometimes. I read a study that said they could grow in pregnancy, and I believe that this has been discussed before. But usually in adulthood, it does not happen unless they feel and feel and feel. They can't be filled anymore, and then your body will make some more. And that's going to usually be on a level of starting to enter into a more extreme and morbidly obese zone. So what can you do about it? There's not really a lot you can do other than, you know, just take part in, you know, regular refeeds, take proper training breaks, eat a balanced diet, and just kind of feel things out, see how you respond best to your dietary habits. Other than that, you know, there can be differences made on what level, and for each person it is going to vary on some sort of level. But I think the big drive home point is, if you have kids or if you work with kids, do the best you can to deter childhood obesity, that way that this isn't as much of a problem for them as an adult. I think that maybe could be a big take-home message from a question like this. So, leave it at that. John, I have a question for you.
No, Tony. Uh-huh.
I don't.
You have a question.
I have it for me, Lee. Damn it. Listen to Kevin.
Oh. Mine says Lee to John. It does say Lee to John on mine.
I know, but I changed it 2 seconds ago, so it's different now.
Oh, well, but makes me sound like...
Ruined everything, Leppel Hill.
Now the show sucks.
Yep.
Leppel! Just one word, fine. John.
So Leppel. I read this to Tony?
Please.
Okay, well, fine. Tony, I have a question for you. I don't know if I heard it on one of your shows, but dips for tri development, the ones where you use two benches, put a plate on your upper thighs, and dip between two benches, good or bad, and if so, why, etc. Tony?
This is one of those ones where I hate to bastardize any one movement because I really feel it just depends on the person, but dips are one of the exercises, at least the way that he's describing it, and even in general, that I'm not a huge fan of. It's really going to depend on a few factors, like, you know, if anyone has a history of AC joint problems, they're not doing dips ever again. It's just not worth it. There's other ways you can train your tries, so to speak. You know, you're just maximally, you're internally rotating the shoulder, max extension. You're just wreaking a lot of havoc on putting a lot of stress on that shoulder, doing the dips in that aspect. I much prefer, stuff like board presses or floor presses or anything like that. If someone really wants to hammer away on the triceps, I'm just not a huge fan of dips in general. So, you know, that'd be my answer to that. So don't do dips. But I mean, like, there's just a ton of other things we can do. Like board presses are great. I love board presses. You know, I'm hit and miss on doing like stuff like skull crushers and stuff like that, especially people coming from that have elbow issues. But dips, I just think there's better ways. There's they can spend their time on better things than doing dips.
Very good, John.
Yes.
Next, Art, do you have anything to add, or do you want to go to the next question?
Oh, no, I think Tony basically hit it. It's just a matter of risk versus reward, and it's right there. I mean, Tony hit it. So I will ask Lee the next question since it's written on my outline as John to Lee, and you didn't make any note of that in the Skype that it should be altered. Lee, did you get that?
I think I should go.
John, the inside joke is not funny whatsoever. And I always have the Skype window open. I'm always reading.
I think we should ask this question to Kevin. I think it's more relevant to Kevin. Ask it to Kevin.
Kevin. Kevin, we have a question.
Let's ask it to Kevin. Thank you.
I'm editing this out.
Kevin, we have a question to Ruben. Guys, reading an article on the net, it stated that having sex frequently...
John, I'm editing this out. No,
it sounds like a lot
John,
of fun.
John, it's being edited out.
Sex, does testosterone increase in a way that may help you develop more muscle mass? I know the question is very broad, but it's an interesting topic. Have sex, rest, work out. Have sex, rest, work out. Better than steroids, right? Hope you can talk about the subject. Wish you the best from Mexico, and that's from Ruben.
John, you have to reread the question.
As our resident sexual expert here, what do you have to say to Ruben?
You're not editing this out.
I am editing this out.
You're not editing this out. This
Come
is
on,
your goal.
Have fun with it.
No, it's being
actually,
edited out.
I think this is... But... This is a legitimate question because people read things and then they kind of think that there's some truth to what they read.
Well, you know what? I do not have the credentials to answer this question, so I'm going to take it and pass it to Lee and then re-record the question asking Lee from me. So most likely. We're still recording. I'm going to decide on this later, but...
I think the audience will enjoy hearing your fail.
Yeah. All right, so, can having sex frequently increase your testosterone levels? It can, but it cannot too. It just depends on the person, and it would depend how much sex you were having too. There could even be, to some degree, maybe a detriment to that if you really wanted to break it down into an experiment. But I've never read that as an experiment, you know, bang, train, as a protocol. I don't think I've ever read that. So since I've never read that and it hasn't been studied, I'm going to go with a very broad answer and say that I don't see how it could be a bad thing to get laid and work out. That it could definitely make your self-esteem better. And then maybe you'll push a little bit harder in the gym. You'd be less frustrated sexually. I don't have a technical answer for this question. I don't think there is a
No, there has been some research on that, though. Yeah,
is there? Because, oh, my God. Give it to me, because I really don't know.
Wow.
I'm just paraphrasing it because I remember reading it years ago. But this has to do with, like, fighters and the old wives' tale of you don't have sex before your fight.
Oh, give it to me.
And from what I recall, and again, I'm just trying to remember it, but they said that it has absolutely no base in reality. And in fact, when you're engaged in sex, you are increasing your testosterone production. So there may, the fact is, it's not going to make a difference. But
yeah, I figured that it could cause some increase. What My difference it would make? On, okay,
but that was, yeah,
what
no,
difference
but I think that,
I don't know.
Yeah, but if it, and I could be wrong, but because I'm just pulling this out of memory, but. From what I recall, they said that it really doesn't have any effect, just even just for academic argument.
Gotcha.
I think the bigger answer here, though, is, you know, there. Although, you know, if let's say a piece of research came out and it said, oh, yeah, it does decrease your performance and we found all this, then you would say, wow, that's pretty interesting. But can we blame that on the effect of testosterone, you know, what or sex hormones? Like when you look at questions like this, and this is just a general statement that I try to, I mean, it's got to pass the sniff test, right? I mean, is it really going to make that much of a difference in your training? You know what I mean? You know, so I think stuff like that, I mean, just a little bit of common sense will probably steer you in the right direction with questions like this, where you hear these wives' tales and you go, really? You know, but.
Well, when you talk about, like, research, is this something that can actually be, you know, done at a university, like getting college kids to participate in this?
Yes, absolutely.
Cool. Hey, Lee, I got another question for you.
Okay, Kevin.
As a very strict vegetarian, I struggle to get adequate protein. This hasn't been a huge issue in the past, but now I'm strength training 3 to 4 times a week. Is it more of an issue? I'm so confused, though. While the specific recommendations for intake vary depending on who and what you read, it is the recommendations per body weight that is confusing me. Some things I have read, for example, 0.75 grams protein per kilogram. Meanwhile, other things say 0.75 grams of protein per pound. Using the 0.7 grams, my weight, I get 48 grams. Well, yeah, basically. Can you clarify what the recommendation should be?
You know, it depends on every person, and yeah, I mean, when you're if you're a strict, I don't really know what strict vegetarian means. That is always kind of a weird statement to me. I mean, if you're a vegetarian, you don't eat meat. But that doesn't mean that you can't have dairy products or that you can't have eggs or things like that. So I don't know if by saying that you mean something like that. If you can get dairy products or if you can get eggs or, you know, even protein powders or things like that, then it really shouldn't be an issue for you in the first place. So just throwing that in there. And then there's also, you know, beans and quinoa and all that other kind of stuff that you can eat. So just throwing that out there, there shouldn't really be that hard of a time being a vegetarian to get in your protein requirements. You know, just a little creativity and a lot of omelets. But, as far as what are the protein recommendations, usually it does vary. I mean, some people do believe that it can be 0.75 grams by kilogram or by pound. I mean, it really does vary that much depending on who you go by for your recommendation. So if you're asking me which one's right per recommendation, it's literally going to be per recommendation. Like, I don't know who gave you what. What do I think? I think that if you're training, you're going to land at a little bit more of what you need going by pound. I think that, you know, in the range of the 0.6, the 0.8 per pound is going to land you a little bit better than per kilogram. But that's, you know, just based upon, especially if you're going to be training, you're going to be utilizing and eating a little bit more protein. So I, in general, would go with by per pound if you're looking at it from that aspect, and you'd get a little bit more protein. Simple as that. So hope that clarified it. I don't really know.
Lee, I have a question. Do they set the recommendations off kilograms? Because what I've read in the past is, like, the lower end range is just basically the stave-off deficiency. So is there any credence to that? Like, maybe they'll use the kilogram, just, like, you know, how doctors would be like, oh, well.
I mean, there's different – yeah, I mean, different – like, it's literally, like, it depends on who you read and right. And it. I mean, it just ranges, because there's some that do it per kilogram and then there's some that do it per pound, and it just depends. To say who's right, it really means, like, well, who are you reading this week? You know, it can be doctors, it can be government, it can be certifications. You know, I mean, different certifications have different recommendations, mm-hmm. And they do it by different measures. So it just so depends. And then if you read someone like Alan Argon, if you read someone like me, we have different recommendations. And I always do it by pound. I believe that.
Yeah, I prefer that way, but.
Yeah, I just think it's easier, especially, I mean, you know, in the United States, a lot of people don't even know how to measure things by kilograms anyway. So I'm very used to talking in pounds and versus that. Because I say kilograms and people are like, huh? They don't know. So, yeah, I just go with pounds. It keeps it easy. But for the basis of, like, you know, should she be getting 48? Because then here it says, should I be getting 48 grams of protein or 105 grams of protein, being 141 pounds? You're going to cover your basis a lot better at 105 versus 48. I don't think 48 grams of protein is going to be quite enough.
Yeah, because I just look at that number 48 and just look at that as, like, that's probably some government body just saying, yeah, you know, you don't need that much protein. This is just enough.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, well, based upon, like, a pyramid standard, you know. Yeah, I mean, like, that's definitely going to be a more kind of government recommendation because, you know, we're still in the high carbohydrates, you know, lower fat, lower mm-hmm. protein kind of basis here with our recommendations. So it really is, like, upon your source. So I think that 48 grams of protein for someone who weighs 141 pounds and is training is too low, based upon my personal non-doctor opinion. You know, so I think that going by pounds is going to land you in a much safer range of providing what you need for training. Word. John, am I reading this to John? Okay,
yes.
Just checking. What should I do for tight, deep hip muscles? It has become very obvious that I need help with this. Any ideas that you would have would be very appreciated. She's very grateful. Lacey.
tight, deep hip muscles. I assume you're talking really about the external rotators. So we have, just like we have a rotator cuff in our shoulder, we have what's referred to as the hip rotator cuff, which are six muscles that make that up. You've got piriformis, which is kind of the leader of the group there, and usually that's talked about more than any of them, but you've got gemelli, superior and inferior, the obturator internus and externus, and then quadratus femoris, which is the lowest one. Generally speaking, and Tony may have some pretty good stretches, usually some form of piriformis stretch will get at them, so stretches where you're crossing one leg over the other and I guess my two favorites, there's one that's in sitting where you're basically crossing your legs over, so your ankle is over the opposite thigh, and then you're going to sit up straight, which is very important. A lot of people will do this slouched over and you won't have the effect of the stretch, but you're sitting up nice and straight and you're just applying not really a pressure on the knee that's crossed over, but more of you're just kind of holding it there, and then the further that you sit up and away from that knee, the more you should feel that stretch. And then the other one is lying down on the floor where you do the same position. You cross over your, let's say if the right hip is what we're trying to stretch, then we cross the right leg over the left thigh. And then what you'll do is you'll reach, you'll kind of, you know, make that hole between your legs there, like crossed over, and you're going to reach through and pull your left thigh into you. So that's going to stretch out the right hip. That's kind of tough to describe without visually seeing it. And then there are others that you can do where you're lying on your back and you basically internally rotate your thighs. So you put your knees together and you spread the feet apart, and that will stretch out the rotators too. Tony, any ideas otherwise? I mean, it's kind of tough to describe.
I can't really elaborate any more than what you did. I like the one you described. There's one that Boyle's a big fan of. I went to his Volume 3 strength coach filming about 3-4 weeks ago, and he does one off the table. That I liked a lot. You're standing tall. You're crossing your leg over on the training table and just leaning forward slightly.
Yeah, I've seen that one too. Yeah, it's a good one. Yeah,
there's that one. And then Nick Tumanello had a good mobilization one that he had in a T Nation article I think last year that we use quite a bit at the facility that we like quite a bit. But those would be the ones I would do. For that I can't really think of anything. And then it's just important as well as when you're working on tissue quality and stretching, it's important to incorporate movement as well. Mm-hmm. So I would say it's just as important. Like, when you're working on, say you're putting a lacrosse ball in that area and trying to break up the knots, then you stretch. But then it's also just as important to incorporate movement after that. So I would suggest doing, a lunge matrix, maybe some deep squats, just to kind of work on grooving that pattern and getting that range of motion back too. So.
Yeah, and I think if she does a search just for, piriformis stretch, that'll come up with the stretches that we're talking about. So, and you can actually visually see what we were describing.
Nick goes through three progressions on his joint mobilization DVD. And if you look for Nick's stuff on YouTube, he also has a couple of them on there if you want to take a look for some visual reference. I know the audio is not always the best.
Yeah. Talking about grabbing through the hole between your legs is probably not helpful. So,
no, but what is helpful is always some inspirational messages from Doc Brown. But that didn't work. So,
failure.
It's not my fault that
I'm really disappointed.
A website that I used to go to back in high school does not have any servers anymore.
Failure.
Hey, John.
Yes, Kevin.
You know what? I walk on off days to help with training recovery. I use an X-Vest to increase the load and therefore increase my heart rate. I have read that you should not load body weight movements beyond 10 to 50% of your body weight to avoid stress on the joints. For example, if you weigh 165 pounds, the max weight should be 16 to 25 pounds in a weight vest. Any truth to this?
It's an interesting question because it's the kind of... We know that added weight to the body will increase the incidence of arthritis, so people that are overweight will...
Welcome to the Cafe 80s, where it's always morning in America, even in the afternoon.
I really didn't mean to do that. That's not my fault.
That was a horrible...
It's not my fault. It started playing when I opened up...
Welcome to the Cafe 80s.
Oh, this one's doing it, too.
It's always morning in America, even in the afternoon.
That's a horrible soundbite, even if you were looking for it.
Yeah.
Worthless.
You remember me, the guy who saved your life the other day?
All right, I'll do my best. Continue, John.
I did my best. So if you're overweight, your incidence, the risk of arthritis is increased, and we know that it's basically joint loading and compressive forces on the joints. Arthritis itself is caused by unusual repeated wear at certain range in the joint. So that can be increased stress from added weight. It can also be hypermobility, so too much flexibility, and that's what we start to look at when people are overstretching. So that specifically would kind of lend a little bit of credibility to that worry about using weighted vests and the long-term effects of it. The issue is, though, is a 20 to 30 minute walk once a day or whatever, enough stimulus to actually significantly increase your risk of arthritis. And that I don't know. I was trying to find my first thought is let's look at what happens in the armed forces because they're hauling, packs of weighted packs all day in their equipment, through their training, through their activities. And there have been some studies that have looked at arthritis in the armed forces. But the problem is we can't really say that just because they're carrying around weight is their reason for getting arthritis or not getting arthritis. So that you can't really pull that information from those studies. There have been some studies that that indicate that armed forces might be getting somewhat increased arthritis, although I couldn't really see much more than the abstract, so I don't even know what level of quality the studies are specifically. But the problem is that there are so many other things that may be contributing to that as well, including diet, general activity, and then, of course, injuries that they're sustaining that can harm you as well and lead you down the road to arthritis. So I don't have a specific answer, but in general, we know added weight can be detrimental to joint health. Other than that, I can't give you a definitive answer.
I'll just say on an aside, like as far as like supplemental training days where it's just recovering blood flow, I'm just from reading Dan John's stuff, I'm just becoming a huge fan of just doing bodyweight stuff, whether it's, mm-hmm. you know, just doing prisoner squats, you know, with suitcase Bulgarian split squats, with pull-ups, to push-ups. Like I go through, you know, 5 circuits of that and my heart rate's pretty high. So, yeah. I mean, just doing stuff like that, I'm a big fan of. And as well as just regular, you know, incline walking. You know, I think a lot of people make them, this gentleman isn't doing that, but making the mistake of, yeah, it's supposed to be a quote-unquote off day, but it actually becomes a training day. Mm-hmm. You know, so people don't really know what an off day entails. And Eric wrote a great article a few years ago. I want to say it was Cardio Confusion. And he talks about the proper way to go about doing a loading for just for a blood flow day. Like the objective isn't to load yourself too much. It's just to, yeah, promote blood flow, mm-hmm. Promote recovery. But a lot of people make the mistake of making it into an actual training day. It's like what's supposed to be an off day ends up being, you know, a 1 rep max almost for most people. It's pretty insane. So people just need to be a little cognizant of when it is an off day, it's supposed to be an actual off day. I mean, I'm all for people being active and doing stuff on their off days, but, they, you know, don't make it the training day.
Yeah. Plus, I think also the other question is, does the weight make a significant difference in the training to begin with? So what are we using that weighted pack for? I mean, and just like you said, Tony, I mean, if it's an off day, is this somehow improving your recovery? I mean, if it's not, then why are you doing it at all? And if you're, you know, most people, I think, use weighted vests for the most part for like a caloric expenditure. I mean, I've seen guys, you know, mixed martial artists using that more as like to increase their activity level and stuff for their training effect. But I think most people figure, well, if I carry around 20 pounds, then I'll be burning more calories. But the fact is, how many more calories is that? And is it a significant amount?
Right.
So it brings the whole function of carrying, using a weighted vest for your exercise into question, because we don't know if it actually makes a difference at all anyway. So it may harm you, it may not harm you, but it may help you or it may not help you. So
I mean, it seemed to me like the loading this guy is using isn't that bad. Like it seems like he's actually doing it for its intended purpose as a recovery day, as a blood flow mm-hmm. day. But we all know that most people aren't going to do that. They're going to be, well, you know, I'm using a 15-pound weight vest here. Let's use a 60-pound weight vest. I'm going to burn 200 more calories, you know, and mm-hmm. we know that's not necessarily the case. And not only that, it's just you're going over that threshold of what an actual, you know, blood flow recovery day is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes a training day, and you're not recovering. You're actually just incurring more fatigue.
And
so, you know.
Well, John, can I throw out a question?
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious. Like, okay, so, wouldn't it also make a difference if like more movements and like different mechanics were involved?
In what terms?
Versus like, you know, just doing like regular like hikes or hill walks or things like that. Mm-hmm. Like the weight is the weight difference is going to be, isn't there like a percentage that's like kind of a safe range? And then above that, like the body starts having a hard time adapting. Isn't that like an issue that has been researched? I'm just asking.
Oh, you mean like
a
necessary strain?
Before like your body starts to do some like, you know, kind of funky bit because it hasn't had time to adapt towards the weight increase, like, you know, somewhere around like 10 to 15%.
We're talking about like a minimal essential strain and like necessary. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I generally. Oh wow, that's a good question. What?
And I don't mean to put you on the spot. I was just curious why
I
brought
I'm
up.
I'm trying to. I mean. 5 to 10% comes to mind, but I could be completely Spielberging that and just making it up. And I think that there is probably a large factor in the individual and what's their training age and training adaptation. Yeah. So, but it is a good question because when you talk about active recovery, how much is active recovery? And one of my favorite, quotes that I got from a podiatrist was the enemy of better is best. So people, you know, consider, well, I'm doing everything really well, but I could probably do it better. And, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I mean, so, you know, sometimes when we're trying to find that last little piece, that last little edge, that may actually be a worse decision to make because everything is going well and altering that too much or increasing that too much could make it worse. So that's a good question. I there are numbers. You're absolutely right. Like I said, I want to say 5 to 10%, and that's usually.
That's what I remember. I remember thinking it was somewhere around 5, 10, 15, something like that too. And I just couldn't remember. And I thought, while y'all were discussing taking it too far.
And then I think also there's that begs the question too, because is 5 to 10% the intensity? Is it the volume? Is it a combination of the two? And I don't know the answer to that. The 5 to 10% is in my mind what we're talking about in intensity. I don't. No volume. There are kind of rules that we follow as far as, you know, rules of thumb of how to increase a program. But I'd be honest, I don't even know if that's evidence based or it's just kind of, you know, anecdotal. Like, oh, you're going to increase your activity 1%. You know, which, you know, can be legitimate, but I don't know if there's any true research behind that. And so I think you generally just kind of play it by ear and say, you know, how do I feel today? And when we get more specific, then we go into, you know, hormonal response and things like that. But the average trainer is not going to be able to do that. So, in general, I would say that as far as active recovery, you're really not looking to do something that's going to cause you difficulty. So carrying around a weighted vest, in my opinion, is probably not necessary for a good active recovery day.
Word.
Yeah.
Nice.
Cool. We're going to say goodbye to Tony.
I got to take off, guys, but have fun with that article. All I'll say about it is that probably one of the worst articles I've ever read, and Selective Journal of Brooklyn sucks.
So, Tony, just tell us how you really feel before you go.
Well, do you want to type out something that we can read when you're gone?
But yo, I'm sure you guys will aptly rip it apart. So, deservedly so.
Yes. Say goodbye to Tony, and we're gonna be.
Thanks for having me on. I'll talk to you guys in a week or two.
Yeah, later, dude.
Thanks.
All right.
Bye.
I'm gonna hang up on you. You hung up. Okay. We're gonna be right back. We're gonna talk about the infamous article from Time Magazine. Stick around. Okay, we are back, and we're going to talk about the Time Magazine article that's in partnership with CNN titled Why Exercise Won't Make You Thin by John Cloud. And this is an article that kind of blew up on blogs, Twitters, and Facebooks, and we're going to discuss it because we got 4 or 5 emails from listeners of the show that wanted us to discuss it, the good, the bad, and the ugly. So, more or less, I'm going to give people a quick rundown on what the article was about. It was John Cloud, who kind of got the idea that I've been exercising for the last couple years and I still have the same body. So I maybe exercise isn't what I need to lose the. It seems like he still had some noticeable abdominal fat, and he thought to himself, "Hey, I'm going to write an article about this in one of the most read magazines and tell people why exercise won't make you thin, and tell people why they're wasting their money." So basically, his argument in the article was that exercise is going to stimulate hunger. And therefore causing you to consume more calories than you actually burn from the exercise. So say if you burn 200 calories exercising, you're going to want to consume 300 calories afterwards. So you're kind of counteracting what you just did. And again, his excuse was that he didn't lose weight while doing, he did a step class. He would do a 5.5 mile run. And he had one session a week with a personal trainer. And one day of the week, he would do a body wedge class, which immediately takes away his man card. Again, he had some more reasonings saying that 60 to 90 minutes per day, which is now the recommended allotment of time by the government of intense physical activity. He says that's not reasonable. People don't have the time to do this. People who have 3 kids and, you know, work 40 hours a week and have to feed the dogs, you know, they don't have time to get in 60 to 90 minutes of exercise per day. Which we'll hit on that in a minute. Converting fat to muscle. That was one of the things. He wants to convert fat to muscle. So we're going to talk about that. He makes more excuses, saying that studies have shown that we shouldn't stress the muscle because that's what's going to cause us to consume more calories. And again, this is another example of the lay press talking about anecdotal evidence, from themselves. And, you know, they don't know what they're talking about. They're going to people to basically get evidence that fits their argument. And they didn't look at anything else. But, you know what, I'm gonna put this to you first, Lee, because I know John is going to talk forever, and I would like you to get most of it out of the way so he doesn't have to repeat a lot of it, and which he does quite a bit if you listen to his follow-ups. But yep.
I look forward to John's knowledge bombs. They're good.
You know, they're bombs, but sometimes it's not like. Never mind. So, anyways.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about it. For one, I got I don't even want to talk about how many emails and messages and Facebook posts and board posts that I saw about this. And I posted a little about it in my blog, but not much. I was going to do a more in-depth article on it, like really dissecting it. But I think first, let's get a couple things out of the way. The whole recommendation of 60 to 90 minutes, it's actually activity. Like if you look at the grade of what the government is talking about, it's not, they're not talking about like hardcore gym exercise. They're talking about activity, walking, you know, just being like generally moving. So to say that people don't have time to do that actually is, that's not true. Like you can get in a decent amount of activity in a day and you should. So I'll hit on that later, but I just wanted to throw that out. Like he made it out to be like as if it was intense exercising, like you're going to be in a gym doing like, you know, interval work. Mm-hmm. And that's not what the range is. But I just wanted to throw that out there. I also would like to note the last sentence in which that he says, I love how exercise make me feel, but tomorrow I might skip the Versa Climber, which I don't even know what that is. I guess that's a gym cardio tool.
Yeah, it looks like rock climbing kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay. And skip the blueberry bar that is my usual post exercise reward. I think that says it all right there in the sentence, doesn't it? So let's talk about the good things about the article in the aspect of it is all diet in the aspect of needing to lose fat. Mm-hmm. And things like that. You have to take in less than you expend in order to lose weight. You have to, you know, eat more than you expend to gain it. There are certain little variable loopholes when you're talking about macronutrients, but at the end of the day, that's still the big bang important point. You ignore that and it's just very special. So I think that that is a good thing, but this guy is obviously a very big Taubes reader. And, does exercise make you hungry? Yeah. It does. Movement makes you hungry. You know, stress makes you hungry, though, too. And I think that anyone who has sat at a computer for 3 hours at a time typing away something, arguing on the message board, or, trying to finish up a report quickly for their job, not moving an inch, but being stressed out and to the point of no return, has wound up very, very hungry afterwards as well. Not moving an inch. So there is a lot of reasonings for hunger, stress, movement, all these kind of things. More caloric expenditure, though, is going to naturally make you want to eat more. You're burning more calories. You're going to want to eat more calories. That's not a stupid notion. It's very commonsensical. The problem is that the holes in this article come and in the aspect of they're not putting two and two together, and they're bastardizing one thing just as much as another thing is be bastardized. You know, it's all exercise, no diet, or it's, you know, you can eat whatever you want as long as you don't eat these certain things and you do the right kind of training and the right kind of post-workout nutrition and you'll lose fat. Those kind of people meet with these kind of people, and it's just, you know, it's a moron convention. It really is. So, I think my problem with this and what I would be interested in discussing amongst the group is why, one, we have to keep going to these extremes when we're discussing that. You know, like why it has to be all exercise, all diet, all things all the time. Like, why do we as a nation keep having to go to extremes of these? Why can't we just understand the baseline of it? And I know that's a very broad question. But the other thing is, and John, it would be great for you to come in on this, is there's a really big difference between fat loss or weight loss and health. And you can eat right all you want, but if you don't train and if you don't move and if you don't try and compensate for what our daily society is giving you, you're going to feel like crap regardless. And it could cause you to actually eat more, and it could cause you to have more problems because of how you feel physically. So why don't we talk about those compensations and what not moving and not taking exercise's importance can be a problem, John?
One thing I want to throw on your guys' heads before we do that is just one other thing I want to talk about is that the issue that we just kind of have is that this is a widely available magazine that a lot of people read, and a lot of parents read this. It's not a lot of 18-year-old people that pick up Time magazine. It's a lot of the you know, 30, 40, 50-year-olds. And he's saying that, you know what, kids that exercise more aren't necessarily in better shape, and that's BS. They show studies that have been done, but a kid that exercises more is going to be a lot happier. They're going to be able to go outside and go play. And that's BS. This is very dangerous, the stuff that he's, you know, kind of spreading here. So I'm gonna throw it off to John though.
Let me talk about the stuff that I did like about the article. I like the fact that it pointed out that if you exercise and you do nothing about your intake and your food, that it's probably not going to work very well. Which I think is a point that unfortunately is missed. Mm-hmm. We have to think about the people that are reading this article, and I'll get into the stuff that I don't like, and obviously there's a lot, but the fact is a lot of people just do one thing or another. They don't do both, or they don't do it expertly, and we are dealing with advanced human physiology. It breaks down to a very simple concept, but in fact it's not too simple at all. It's not so simple at all, and it can be very complicated. So people that are going to the gym, but they're just like this guy does, you know, their post-workout meal is a frappuccino and a brownie. Well, no kidding, you're not losing weight. And I think ultimately that's what this article boils down to. It's much ado about nothing, because he's basically saying that if you're still eating like crap, you're not going to make much of a difference, and that's obvious. But I did like the fact that at least it's pointed out if you interpret it that way. Unfortunately, it wasn't written that way. So it's written basically to say not to not bother exercising, because I think he does pay some lip service to that. But he does it very casually, kind of saying, well, it's a duh. Everyone knows that exercise will make you healthier, but let's focus on weight loss. And so if you skip over that part, people are going to basically say, oh, why am I busting my butt and spending all this money in the gym? It's not doing me any good, and here's mm-hmm. an article that shows me that, and that is incorrect.
Yeah.
It is calories in, calories out. We can break it down after that, and then we can start to dissect the hormonal response and the substrate usage and the this and the that and all the different things that go in it. But it is, if you don't have a caloric deficit, you will not lose weight. That's physics. And this article is painfully saying this, and it's not really pointing that out. It's just, you know, saying don't bother. So that's the first thing that bothers me about the article, and I think that we kind of talked about that. Looking at some of the studies that were that he quoted, again, ridiculous studies. The one study takes a look at, you know, these women, these four groups of women that were not controlling their appetite, and in fact the placebo group or the control group probably controlled their appetite just because they were more aware of what they were eating and they lost weight too. So that's just kind of a dumb omen again. It's basically backing up what the article says, but it's not really telling us much. There are other things talking again about the children. When they looked at the Pensacola scientists with 206 kids, ages 7 and 11, and they looked at three schools, a private school, an expensive private academy that got 9.2 hours per week of scheduled exercise, mm-hmm. and then a village near Plymouth and an urban school, both public schools, they got 2.4 hours and 1.7 hours. And what the article talks about and what the actual researchers attribute to the fact that they all got the same amount of exercise if you look at their weekly schedules is, well, the private school kids must have done enough in school and now they're too tired and they won't want to do anything else. That's completely ridiculous. There are so many socioeconomic and cultural factors that could be involved in that. And to just attribute it to, well, they must have exercised too much is ridiculous. We don't – the article says nothing about how long they're in school for. A lot of private academies, you go to school for a lot longer. If you've got a rich population in a private academy, that is a completely different cultural group than what might be an urban school, what might be a suburban school. As far as what are these kids are doing after school, most of those – children in affluent communities will go to after-school programs. They will go to learning centers. They will have homework pressures and things that their families may or may not be encouraging. And, you know, if you look at affluent families and how they handle children and schoolwork versus urban areas where they may not be ingrained in academic culture or have the time or the ability to. So completely different populations. To compare them is almost ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So that's having not read that article, so I can't – maybe they did account for all that. But just on face value in the Time article, I thought that was utterly ridiculous. I don't know. Other than that, I mean, I think you guys talked about it. It's unfortunately looking for – to shock, and it's not a very informative article at all.
Well, what kind of responsibility does Time Magazine have to their readers?
I mean, I think the problem with this, though, and again, I mean, we've talked about this a thousand times, and I don't want to beat a dead horse, but there's too many cooks in the kitchen, mm-hmm. And there's too many people. Like, for example, and I really don't like Taubes. And I get knocked for this a lot because there's a lot of people that really support his work. But he is, I mean, you want to talk about someone who takes anecdotal or small isolated cases and tries to blow them up into something that needs to speak for a world population. It's Taubes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he, like the start of his book, have you read Good Calories, Bad Calories? I mean, it's huge. Yeah. Okay. Well, the start of his book starts out with a guy, and like literally, this is what it starts out. It starts out with a guy who is overweight back in the day, and he can't lose weight. He's done everything. He's tried it all, and then finally, he removes grains and basically any sort of like quote unquote processed carbohydrate from his diet. All of a sudden, he can eat all the buttermilk and meat and cheese he wants, and he'll lose fat. And voila. The anecdotal story that born the book was, made. And then Taubes himself talks about, I did all this and I did all that. And it wasn't until I cut the carbs. And it's that same story that we see over and over again, especially with low carbers. And I mean, I'm technically a low carber, so I'm not knocking, but you have to understand the variables that come into play. It's a lot easier to mess up the measuring of carbohydrates. It's a lot easier to get in excess carbohydrates than it is protein. But then, you know, they douse everything in olive oil, hit a plateau, and they don't understand, you know, what happened. Well, it's like, yeah, you're taking in, like, quarts of oil at a time. You think that that's not going to affect you. It's like that guy, that low-carb Blaine guy on, like, you know, food TV. I keep weighing the same. I don't know what's happening. I hit a plateau. Well, you're, like, dousing, like, your entire meal with, like, massive amounts of oil. What do you think's going to happen? Like, it's that not understanding of the fundamentals. And then, you know, Taubes will come along and he'll pull, you know, some sort of Indian tribe that lived, like, off of the perch of a small island somewhere and be like, oh, well, they weirdly got obese for no reason. And obviously, because this happened to this very small Indian tribe, this is why, you know, people in America working at offices stopping at the McDonald's drive-thru are fat. You know, it's obviously it's the exact same link. You can't create links like that. And you can't put very small studies of really weird things, like, for example, the school. You know, I mean, that's a very special circumstance, private schools. You have, you know, it's a totally different social interaction. It's not going to be the same thing as an urban environment. You know, even, you know, play is going to be different. And so there's so many factors and variables there. So you just can't compare the two. And even if you did compare the two and tried to find some way of doing it, it's not going to fit to the world population. The world population is not divided into private schools and public schools in that kind of a sense. The majority of our schools are public, you know, so it doesn't even make sense to try and bring that in as an argument. And I just think that this guy obviously is a big Taubes fan. It's written all over the article. And if you read the book, then you would know right off the bat that it's just 100% from the exercise, because that's what Taubes talked about a lot. It makes you hungry. It's called working up an appetite for a reason. And I agree with that. But that doesn't mean that it's not relevant or important to you know, so many things. And if you care at all about body composition, then you have to exercise, period. You know, like it's something that's going to be needed, or be very, very active in your type of lifestyle. You know, there's a big difference between an office worker and, say, a mechanic. You know, so, I mean, that's going to be a relevant difference as well. So I don't know. I just think my problem with this article and my problem with, like, Taubes and the people that follow him in general is they always pull this very minute study or this very, you know, isolated incident kind of thing that usually isn't even that good of a study anyway in the first place, and they try and have it prove some sort of point that has no relevance whatsoever to the world population and what's really going on. So I didn't, you know, I like the article in the sense of it driving home the point of calories count and they matter, and yes, that is important, but the rest of it is just a really big face plant.
It's good stuff. People should go check it out. I'll throw a link for it in the show notes. You can kind of make up your own mind, and maybe if you want to put some comments in the show notes, we'll read a couple of those off next week. Yay. All right. hey, Lee, I forgot to ask you, what up? What up at leefield.com?
Not much. I was going to do an article on this. That was more in depth, because an article like this is so, there's so much to it. There's so many points that you can hit and talk about, like what John talked about, you know, especially with like the studies and stuff and going more in depth about that. And, so I was going to do a more updated article on this, which will, everybody will be tired of it by the time I actually get done with it, I'm sure. But still, I was going to do that. And then, I have an article coming out about, information overload, and relevance to like research and things like that. So that's about it though.
Yeah. Awesome. Hey, John.
Yo.
You ever get off your ass and do anything anymore?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up.
67 hours last week. I worked a 17-hour day on Tuesday.
I worked 2 hours on Thursday and 1 hour on Friday.
Good for you. I also got finished my emergency responder course, and so I'm an emergency responder.
Shut up.
Yeah.
It's going to work out great at those magic tournaments that you go to.
Oh, no.
Magic
no,
cards. No. Hey. I think we're going to do it.
You already done did it.
Gone up and did it.
Been dunded.
Really? Who do you guys want us to play us out this week? What? Give me a band.
A band?
Or a song.
Song. Kind of putting us on the spot.
I am. It just makes it look like the show's longer, so.
Okay, well, what about, like...
Because that's what the listeners want.
Let's do Huey Lewis in the News, since you've been trying to do that.
Good call, Lee.
Yeah. Take me away. I don't mind.
Oh, Pink Dumbbell Award, by the way.
Oh, wait, hold on. I can do that first.
Oh, wow.
Whoops, wrong one.
I love that you made that noise before you hit the Tony Channel.
This is Tony Channel Core.
That's not my fault. That's the second time I did that.
Oh. You know, we should come up with some kind of like Pink Dumbbell Award graphic and just send the email to the winner. Like, congratulations, you've won the Pink Dumbbell Award.
Like some really like ghetto thug wannabes wearing like.
I think it could be something nice, like.
Oh, nice to see.
I was thinking it'd be fun if they were all like up in your face, like, "What up?"
Doc Brown shows up in the DeLorean to a Huey Lewis concert. Huh. So I'm gonna fast forward this. So
that's horrible.
Now I know. Just keep going, John. I'm gonna find it. So.
Pink Dumbbell Award goes to Rob and his daughter for saving the puppies. That was key.
Hook you guys both up with t-shirts, size small. Well, Rob can have a different size, but our Tony, they'll probably come from Tony.
Yeah, so...
And he's not wearing his anymore.
Here it is, the moment you've been...
God, YouTube, I didn't tell you to play.
So, Rob, send your mailing information to Kevin at thefitcast.com.
All right.
.com.
didn't they go out of business? What is that? All right, we're going to leave with some Huey Lewis in the News singing Power of Love. Because it's more than a feeling. That's the power of love. Take care, everyone. Have a great week. Is there a better way to end a show than with Power of Love by Huey Lewis in the News?
Nah.
Not too many that I can think of.
Don't need money. Don't pay credit cards. Ride this train. Strong and it's sudden like and it can be cruel sometimes. But if I'm just taking a ride, that's the power of love. I love how we're all off because of Skype. Alright, that's it. Hope you had fun. Well, welcome to this week's off-topic discussion section. Oh, wait, I should probably turn my TV off. Can you guys hear that?
No.
I got SportsCenter on right now.
But now we know it's there.
I got SportsCenter, too.
Oh, crap. All right, well, I'll do it after we record this. But Tony, Lee, John, Kevin is the panel, third person. And Tony, how you been? We're going to go to you first because I haven't talked to you in a while.
I know. It's been ever since I got vilified for my Michael Jackson comments last on last show. I haven't been.
That's so true. You did get destroyed for that.
I don't know if that's coincidental or. No, I've been great. Things have been really busy at the facility. Most of our college kids are just starting to get ready to head back to school, so we're kind of tying things down with them, and I'm enjoying my day off. I'm hanging out with you guys.
That's a good way to do it. You seen any good movies lately?
Yeah,
I know we can talk about Food Inc. a little bit.
Last time I was on the show, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. And I just swore.
Well, I went and saw it again. I've seen it twice. The best movie I've seen so far this year is 500 Days of Summer. And phenomenal movie. Great movie. It's
Did you cry?
No, I didn't. Surprisingly, no. It's just about a couple that breaks up, but it's very, it's like a, it's comedy. It has a little bit of everything for the guys and the girls, but really great movie. So I highly recommend that one. And last night I actually went and saw Moon.
Oh, I want to see that so bad.
Yeah, it was really good. Really good. I actually saw it out down in Davis Square, but I remember reading snippets about it, but I actually went and saw the trailer. I was like, holy cow, it looks really good. So we went and saw that last night, and definitely worth it. So, but yeah, I'm waiting. I'll be waiting to go see G.I. Joe. That came out this weekend, so I'll go see that.
John, you can talk, just you don't have to talk in the chat. It was probably something about the Yankees Red Sox series, but
I actually just wanted to prepare you for that.
All right, well, that's okay. We're not going to talk about sports this week. No UFC or baseball this week.
Kev, are you sure?
No, I don't think so.
I think there was a lot going on in sports this week.
No, there hasn't really been much.
The UFC, wasn't it last night?
Yeah, the UFC was last night.
Yeah, but we talked about UFC a couple weeks ago.
UFC, well, I mean, okay, so then I'll just summarize really quick. Anderson Silva beat down Forrest Griffin very much like Yankees beat down the Red Sox this past.
So, hey, John, if I could sum up, UFC dudes got hit, right?
Yeah, they did.
All right.
Some got submitted.
All right, dudes got hit. End of story.
Some of them got choked like the Red Sox choked in the last two games.
That's all right, John. I'm gonna be okay. So it's not that big of a deal. You know what I saw?
Tears rolling down your face when the Red Sox couldn't score a run in two straight games.
What did I? You know, I just bought Watchmen on DVD, and I'm trying to get the courage to spend 3 hours and watch that again. But
I got that in my Blockbuster online queue. I got it in the mail this week. So I was thinking of you, Kevin, because you and I had our mandate and went and saw that in IMAX.
Yeah, that was quite enjoyable. That was like the second week of Destination.
It wasn't weird at all when you tried to hold my hand or anything.
only during the big blue penis scenes.
All that smurf porn was just romantic.
No, but honestly, the woman who was in that, gorgeous. Oh my god, so hot in that.
She's
pretty good. You'd probably have sex with her if she was right there next to you right now, so naked. Think about it. All right, now that we got that awkward stuff out of the way,
you got some standards, Larry.
Hey, this
we
is,
will not
this
talk
is...
about sports. We will only talk about big blue penises.
Yeah, that's how we roll. But the crap was I going to talk about? I forgot to blank out the swears last week and put in the Pink Dumbbell Award music. So
oh, yeah, how's that been going? By the way, if you got has it been a swear free show the last few weeks?
Mostly.
No.
I had a.
I didn't do anything.
Lee had a phantom SH word, and I could never find it. I could never find it. I have no idea what you're talking about, Lee Peel, but you did not swear.
Leppel Hill.
LeppelHill.com.
You know what? Whatever. I'm getting called that like everywhere now. I want you to know that.
Good. You got to go to.
Just play the music.
Yeah, well, I'm queuing it up because I reinstalled that software, so I got this stuff going.
You won't play it when the actual Pink Dumbbell Award happens. You're playing it during Off Topic.
This is Tony Channel 4.
I didn't mean to do that. I swear to God, I didn't mean to do it. It was set on. No, hold on. Calm down. Hold on. Let me turn down my headset. All right, hopefully that's better. No, seriously, Tony. Seriously, it was set on shuffle, and it was just in the playlist for my Fitcast related stuff. But we did get one email in the mailbag this week about some of the music that I talked about last week, and that was from Musis. I hope I said that right. Almost looks like music. Just bought Company of Thieves for my wife. Thanks for the recommendation. The English accent rules. So basically, another confirmation that I listen to girls' music. So got another email about that last week, so I'm really happy about that. It's a good song, though.
Thanks.
You're welcome. What else do we have to talk about? Lee, what's up?
Nothing. I was reading.
And you know, people have, like, they're sending in emails all the time like, what up, Lee?
Yeah, and I'm also getting Facebook messages about it, too.
Internet memes started on the FitCast.
I know. A lot of people harassing me start here. This is where it starts. Oh, and I got made fun of the massive thing, too. Thanks a lot, John. Dick.
Oh, no problem. That was a swear.
That's not a swear.
No, it's a name. It's like Richard.
Well, no, my name is Jonathan, then. You got that incorrect.
Oh, really? You're not a dick?
No.
You look like a dick.
Where do you get dick out of Richard?
Who knows? Oh, that's Tricky Dick, you know, yeah. Richard.
Nixon. Yeah, but there's got to be a reason for it, like where that, you know, like you call me John, it's a no-brainer. You call a guy named Richard Dick, it's kind of a stretch. No pun intended.
Who do you guys want to have as a celebrity guest on the show this week?
Oh, I'm not the celebrity guest?
No.
Where is our...
I'm sorry to disappoint you, but you're going to live to enjoy all the glorious good life has to offer. Acne, shaving, premature ejaculation, and your first divorce.
That's a Last Action Hero reference.
This off topic is an epic fail, by the way.
They
always are, because we never have anything prepared. We have an entire outline.
Like, honestly, people listen to this.
They do, and
they like it.
We have an entire outline for the show, and we have nothing ever written for the off topic. We just
go by
there.
The seat of our pants with the off topic.
And Kevin, you know this as well as we all do. Like, Kevin's just like, "Hey guys, how's it going? Okay, off topic. 3, 2, 1, go." And you're like, "Duh." Like, you got nothing.
I like turtles.
Yeah, I love lamb. Oh, wow. Check out all these highlights of the Yankees-Red Sox series.
Back here live at the Waterfront Village with my friend, the zombie, Jonathan. You're looking good. Jonathan just got an awesome face paint job. What do you think?
I like turtles.
All right. Josh. Tom's here at the Waterfront Village, open for the next 11 days.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that.
Have you seen the thing when Bill O'Reilly interviews the kid?
Yeah. That's awesome. Hysterical.
Now for the top story tonight. What should be done to Iran for abusing the captured Brits? Joining us now from Portland, Oregon, Colonel Ann Wright, who taught the Geneva Conventions to troops at Fort Bragg. Colonel Wright spent 29 years in the Army before retiring. And according to the UN, this is a violation of the Geneva Conventions, holding these people, and it's an unprovoked act of aggression. Do you agree?
I like turtles.
You didn't answer my question, so I'll pose it again. The UN says that this was a violation of the Geneva Conventions, which you taught. And they say this was an unprovoked act of aggression by Iran. Do you concur, madam?
I like turtles.
I just want you to be aware of how you're coming across. I've asked you very specific questions, which you generalize answer. You then threw it back into the Americans' court for no reason. America isn't in play here. You just threw it back.
I like turtles.
Goodbye. All right? I'm glad she came on. I wanted you to see her.
You know, the only thing that's better to watch than Bill O'Reilly is, what's his name? The Beck guy.
You said a swear.
Beck? Why is Beck a swear?
No, you said it before.
You said it, yeah.
Yeah, you just dropped an F-bomb.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you did one earlier.
Are you serious?
Yeah. You don't even know when you swear, Kevin.
Crap.
By the way, when you coming back out to the facility to get a lift in?
When I won't go in there and get my butt kicked for doing a back and
George actually,
day.
What was awesome, George showed up yesterday and he brought 3 ginormous tires and dropped them off. And we're going to get, he said he's going to bring a 700-pound one maybe next week or the week after.
Oh, that's cool. We just got two new ab machines at my gym.
Nice.
That's not a joke.
We're going to order some Val slides.
I already got some, man. My gym's better than yours.
Yeah, okay.
We just got a new yoga chair or something like that. That's some kind of yoga device. Or Pilates chair, maybe that's what it is.
Did you take in your kettlebells?
I did. I took in three of the four. And
actually, I had, speaking of kettlebells, Natalie, who's a girl that comes out on Saturdays, trains at Sports Club LA, and she was telling me she has friends that go to Boston Sports Club, and a couple of the Boston Sports Club are now implementing kettlebells. But apparently, in order for members to use them, they have to go through
training.
A safety course,
yeah.
Which I find a little weird.
Yeah, you know, I think it's...
It's just like, are you kidding me? Like, I don't know how long it is. I mean, is it, what is it,
an hour, two hours?
What is it?
I don't know. Hopefully no one from Boston Sports Club is listening, but I rarely follow the rules there, so I really...
I don't think it's like a universal thing. I think it just goes by, you know, I don't think it's like a universal BSC thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it just goes by if the fitness manager there wants to implement it, they implement it.
Oh, crap. All right. We're going to do a show right now. We'll be back in a, all right, it's all over. Thanks.